Bu CSIS'in başında.
Ladies and gentlemen, good afternoon. Welcome. We're going to start the program today. My name is Lindsay Lloyd. I'm the Europe Director for the International Republican Institute. On behalf of IRI and the Center for Strategic International Studies, we're very happy to have all of you here for this roundtable discussion today on Turkey and the U.S.-Turkish relationship. We want to thank Congressman Wexler and his staff for their assistance in making the room available to us. Also, thank Congressman Shays for taking the time to do this today. Obviously, we've got a very crowded room. We have a great deal of attention.
I
appreciate that. We are going to need to ask, as best we can, keep this corridor that runs along the side of the room free, because there are people working in this office here who need to be able to get in and out of their office. So if you can bear with us on that. To start off, just a few words about IRI in Turkey. We've been working in Turkey since the mid-1990s on a variety of programs to strengthen democratic institutions. For those of you who may not know IRI, we are a nonpartisan, non-governmental organization. We conduct human rights and democracy programming in about 70 countries around the world. Along with our sister organization, the National Democratic Institute, our activities include things like political party development and strengthening civil society work, encouraging participation by youth, women, and disadvantaged groups, improving governance and policy. Our programs in Turkey have always been a bit different because Turkey, of course, has a very robust and vibrant and connected democracy. For that reason, most of our programs there have been focused on youth and trying to get the enormous population of Turkish youth more integrated into political life in that country. That includes things like strengthening youth political organizations, creating an internship program in the Turkish Parliament, and similar efforts. Last year, we began a new effort, including this program today, a series of roundtable discussions that are looking at some of the key issues in Turkey today and in the U.S.-Turkish relationship. These roundtables have examined questions such as secularism in Turkey, Turkey's role in the ongoing debate over energy pipelines and energy supplies for the European continent, the role of women in politics, and so on. Today's discussion, we hope, will provide some insight into some of the many challenges and issues that are happening in Turkey and in the U.S.-Turkish relationship. We have three very distinguished panelist members of the Turkish Parliament with us today. With that brief introduction, I'm happy to yield the floor to Glenn Paluiza, Director of the Turkey Project at CSIS.
Thanks, Lindsay. Also, I'd like to welcome all of you to this joint meeting. And remind Lindsay that the last time we did one of these joint meetings was in 2002, at the time of very important elections in Turkey. For different reasons, this is also a very important time to have a meeting on Turkey. As you know, we have to focus on U.S.-Turkish relations. The title of the meeting is U.S. and Turkey, Another Honeymoon, which, not coincidentally, is the title of our most recent CSIS Turkey update. On copies are available. The relationship stretches back all the way to the beginning of the Cold War, and it's had its ups and downs. It had apparently one upward cycle, but who knows which way it's going to go, particularly when you look at what's been happening since 2003. And we're going to have the three speakers from Turkey in a minute. First, we'll have Congressman Shays, who recently visited Turkey. And I just reminded him that we met very briefly at the foreign minister. He was going to a meeting and I was coming out. So I'm looking forward to hearing from the Congressman. And thank you again for joining us, Congressman Shays.
Thank you all very much. I really welcome all of you. And it's wonderful to be with my colleagues from the Turkish Parliament. I want to say what I need to say and not spend the 10 to 15 minutes that was allocated to me. I'm going to try to cover what I need to cover in less than 8 minutes. And I just want to be very candid and frank, and I think that I can be that way because I have tremendous affection for the Turkish people, its government, and the more I learn, more and more empathy. But it is a very difficult relationship. And the more I get involved, the more I realize that relationship is difficult. But it's important that we, people like myself, work a little harder trying to understand that relationship. First off, Turkey is an extraordinarily important country. I mean, many countries are important, but this country in particular is very important to so many peoples around the world. It is the gateway to Europe in one sense. It's the gateway to Asia. That's the traditional way of thinking of it. It is a very a large Muslim nation that is democratic, and it is powerfully democratic. I may say some things that would offend some, but I'll say them, and if I'm wrong, then I'll learn from my statement. But I view it as two governments. I view it as a democratic government, and I view the army as being almost a government in and of itself. And I didn't think that way when I first began to interact with Turkey. My interaction with Turkey was really partly motivated by its neighbor to the south, Iraq. And when I go, and I want to say, to kind of fill out my feeling, I visit the neighbors around Iraq, and I've been to Iraq 19 times. That's an area that I feel I need to spend a lot of time, given my role as chairman of the National Security Subcommittee, now its ranking member, and given that I voted to go into Iraq and was wrong about weapons of mass destruction, given I've engaged our troops there. So when I go to the Turkish government, what they say to me is, we used to run this place for 402 years. Why don't you pay attention to us? It's a good question. When I go to Egypt, they say, we've been a country for 4,000 years. Why don't you pay attention to us? I go to Jordan, and they say, we're the Hashemite kingdom, direct descendants of Mohammed. Why don't you pay attention to us? I go to Iraq, and they say, we're the Fertile Crescent, the beginning, as we see it, of Western civilization, civilization in general, as they view it. And they would say to me, why don't you pay attention to us? They will be particularly in Iraq offended by Americans who talk about how this isn't a real country. They'll say to me, didn't you read about us when you were going to school, about where the two rivers meet, those two rivers coming from where? Turkey. I've had this interest in a region that is a very proud place. And I sometimes think pride trumps sometimes what we in the West would like to think is rational thinking. I was stunned, I'm getting used to it, with how difficult it is for a friend to be a friend to Turkey. I, as a member of Congress, said, I want to go out east. I want to visit Harbor Gate. I strongly believe the PKK are terrorists, like the President of the United States and like our government's official policy and a very sincere policy. There's no fine line here. The PKK is a terrorist organization. We'd like Europe to wake up to that fact. And so I said, this member of Congress wants to go out to the eastern part of Turkey, where members haven't usually gone, and learn more about the region. It was a fascinating experience to go the day before in Ankara and have a meal with members who have a Kurdish background, but were not part of the Kurdish-Iraqi, Kurdish-Turkish party, but were Kurdish members in the power party in power, and then to have the press talk about a secret meeting, to have the press talk about how this member of Congress was coming in to make a deal with either the Turkish government or the PKK or something. I felt very elevated. The paparazzi was following me, and it was really kind of a kick in one way. As we traveled along, 20 cars following, as if somehow I had this great mission, other than a member of Congress who wanted to be better friends with Turkey and to be sane publicly. Now, I ended up meeting with some families who had lost loved ones because their members were part of the PKK. And they sat and talked with me and started to talk about how they had been treated unjustly and that this was a noble movement. And I said to them, in my judgment, the PKK is a terrorist organization. There's an American talking to family members who lost loved ones who were part of the PKK. And still, there was suspicion. I realized that I needed to make sure I met with some individuals in in the government, civilians and military personnel who had been victims of the PKK, and before I left, I made sure I had that meeting. A young soldier who died, he had a younger brother and two younger sisters. One of his sisters has a physical challenge. The mother is obviously devastated by her dear son, who was killed for doing his job of trying to keep the peace in eastern Turkey. All of that, I would say to the Turkish government, was helpful to me as a member of Congress and made me more sympathetic to the challenges that were faced. But it was like I had to negotiate. And I could say I got no help from the military in facilitating my visit. I would have loved to have interacted with the military in the eastern part of Turkey, and that was not allowed. Now, I could say I got help because they didn't stop me, and they could have stopped me like that. But it was interesting to me, the fact that the military had such an important role in this. And you could all say to me, well, you're pretty naive not to have known that before. So you're right. But welcome to members of Congress, who I say, being a member of Congress is like going to a large university, being told you have to take every course and get a passing grade. We tend to know very little about a lot of things, and then we specialize. My point is, here's a member of Congress who wants to specialize in the region, and wouldn't it be helpful for the Turkish government to realize that they have a friend who, the more I learn, the more a friend I could be. The visit to Harbor Gate was amazing, but it was stunning that it takes a driver 7 to 10 days to get through the gate, in spite of the fact that we have this modernized gate. And it takes him maybe almost as long to get back. So if you're a businessman in Turkey, you have to have one truck and one driver, and you might get a trip and a half a month from that investment. And it doesn't have to be that way. Sympathy for Turkey, it has 8 countries that surround it. I would say to the Turkish government that the more they can work out their differences with their neighbors, particularly Armenia, the better it will be for them and the world, and that negotiating and dealing with its neighbors in a more upfront way is not a sign of weakness to at least the Western world that I'm a part of, but it's a sign of strength and maturity. And my hope and prayer is that we will see, and I'll end with this, that we'll see this government less suspicious, less inclined to deal with its neighbors, and less defensive. The Prime Minister spoke at the Munich conference where I was at, and there was a very sincere question from the Armenian delegation about all the ways they want to work with Turkey. And I thought, what a precious comment from these Turkish representatives. And the Prime Minister acted like he had been attacked. That's a lesson to me of how he views the world. But I have tremendous respect for the Prime Minister of Turkey. I think he is a tremendous leader, a giant. And yet I saw this part of him that I thought pulled him down in a way he didn't need to be. So I'll end by saying, I love this government. I don't understand it like I'd like to. But I'd like to be a better friend, and the next time I go to the eastern part of Turkey, I'd love the military to help make the visit a little easier. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Congressman. I hope you'll be able to stay for...
I will stay. I'm sorry I spoke for 9.5 minutes, but...
perfect.
Okay.
Great timing. Again, welcome to our Turkish visitors, and the first speaker... he's going to be Ilhan Balış, and stick to the schedule on the invitation. He's a member of the Turkish National Assembly from Istanbul. In fact, all three of our speakers are from Istanbul. He's a member of the Justice and Development Party, AK, to use his Turkish acronym. He's also vice chairman of the Party for Foreign Affairs. Mr. Balış, welcome to Washington.
Thank you, Bülent. I'd like to start by thanking IRI and CSIS for organizing yet another meeting for us to have a dialogue, to better understand each other. I'm not sure if I agree with the title of the meeting about honeymoon, because Turkish-American relations are much deep-rooted than a honeymoon relationship, especially while having this meeting in a country where 50% of all marriages end up with a divorce, and knowing the fact that honeymoons are expensive, sometimes illusionary, but I like to state that Turkish-American relations are mature, productive, based on mutual respect, and they have a long history. Both countries share more now than 5 or 10 years ago. And in the last 5 years, while my party has been in government, the relationship has increased in many different aspects. It used to be a hollow concept, talking about strategic relationship, but we have put it on paper. There is a strategic vision statement announced by Secretary of State, Dr. Rice, and Turkey's current president, who was our Minister of Foreign Affairs. And if there was a list of 20 top issues that the U.S. State Department deals with, I can bet 15 of them have to involve Turkey. So Turkey is very much involved in the top issues and priorities of this country. Turkey is a regional power, and we also have increasing global responsibilities. These are global tasks, global duties that we perform, such as ensuring stability and prosperity in our region. We have a responsibility of proving to the world the country with a predominant Muslim nation can be democratic, can be pro-Western, can adapt to a free market economy, and can serve as a source of inspiration to 1.5 billion Muslims around the world who are following every development in Turkey very closely, especially Turkey's relations with European Union, which is an important modernization project in our history. We have the responsibility of assuring our European partners that Turkey is an asset to EU. As a key energy hub, we have responsibilities towards global energy security. We are the access point to the Caucasus. Turkey is an emerging market. So we have responsibility in ensuring higher economic growth and contribute to the global financial stability. All these responsibilities require Turkey to be a reliable team player. And the U.S. sees that. If Turkey was taken out of all these equations, then we would witness severe global repercussions. Secretary Gates is in Turkey as we speak. He had very good meetings in Ankara. We see a positive mood. Cooperation continues between the two countries. I think November the 5th was the turning point in the relationship where President Bush declared that PKK is the enemy of Turkey, enemy of Iraq, and enemy of the United States, and we will combat this mutual enemy together, and that's what we've been doing. The ongoing operation in the northern part of Iraq is an attempt to put terrorists out of their operation. For us, PKK is what Al-Qaeda is to you, and we have that understanding, and we have good communication. As Secretary Gates said, the key for all parties is transparency, cooperation, and communication. And that's what's happening. And the operation will end in a reasonable time. We don't like our boys out in the harms of in the way of harms either, but they have to finish the task that they've been missioned to complete. In terms of, there was an article today at the Washington Post that the current operation was an attempt to change the agenda in Turkey about the headscarf issue. I think, you know, there are always those both in Turkey and in the U.S. who want to deteriorate the relationship, but there are doomsday scenario writers in Turkey, although your Hollywood Guild writers are on strike, ours never are on strike, they constantly write chaos scenarios. But I have bad news for them.
Sure.
The Iraqi operation has nothing to do with headscarf. That's too much trouble for everybody, and it doesn't add up.
Yeah.
But talking about the relations, I was just with a congressman, and I found out that the number of members of the Turkey caucus is the highest ever. So there's huge interest in the U.S. Congress about Turkey. And overall, the relations between Turkey and the United States are one huge project with dozens of subtitles, and that's not only one bilateral, but global, it doesn't have bilateral, but global ramifications. and this is a good project, and everybody benefits. Are there challenges? Of course there are challenges, but they're not on strategic issues. They're on tactical issues and short-term issues. The challenge is both Turkey and the United States are doing things that they haven't bilaterally done in the past. There are some uncharted waters. However, we have strong compass, common interests, and we'll move on in these uncharted waters. Iraq is a short-term challenge, but a long-term opportunity for all parties, including the Iraqis. And I've always said in my previous remarks, both in this country and in Turkey, that it wouldn't be possible for the United States to change the image of U.S. in Middle East, in Europe, in Africa, in the Caucasus easily. But it would be easy to change the image of U.S. in Turkey overnight with concrete support against PKK. And 6 months ago, according to the polls, 85% of Turks were against U.S. And today, 56% of Turks are pro-United States. This shows that the support that we're getting, the actionable real-time intelligence, and the support in the fight against PKK and the fight against international terrorism has helped, and we're looking forward to cooperating with the United States in many other opportunities. Our understandings might seem fragile, but are getting stronger, and a trilateral relationship between Turkey, United States, and Iraq is going to provide great opportunities for all three countries.
Thank you, Yaman. I see Congressman Kuhl joined us. Thank you. It's nice to have you with us.
Why don't you come on up here? Come on up here.
Well, I don't mind saying
it. No, why don't you participate?
No, I'll just listen. I can't stay very long.
Congressman Whitfield has a lot of, deserves a lot of credit in the relationship. He is the head of the Turkey caucus, co-chair of the Turkey caucus.
Congressman, I know you won't be able to stay too long, but before we proceed to second and third Turkish speakers, would you like to say a few words? We'd be honored.
Well, I would just say that we certainly appreciate this forum today, and it's always glad. We're always happy to see our parliamentarians from Turkey. And of course, Egemen Bağış has been a real leader in the Turkish parliament in the parliamentary exchanges that we've had, and he's been a real leader over there in improving the relationships between Turkey and the U.S. And I might say on behalf of the Turkish caucus that we are quite excited that now we have about 73 members of Congress that are members, and we have about four other members of Congress that are getting ready to join, which would give us the largest number of members of Congress that we've had in the caucus ever. So I think we're making great progress within the U.S. Congress and impressing on members the importance of this relationship and continued dialogue between the two countries. And of course, Chris Shays has been a real leader in this effort for some time, and we're always delighted to see him.
I eat the crumbs off your table,
But thank you so much. And Hegwin, we're delighted you're in town again.
Thank you, Congressman. Now we continue with Fatmanur Sarıkaya, who's a member of the Turkish Grand National Assembly for the Republican People's Party, CHP, to use his Turkish acronym. Welcome to Washington.
Thank you. I firstly would like to thank IRI and CSIS for this kind invitation of giving us a chance to exchange views and knowledge with the most distinguished members of the American society. My plan at the beginning was to give you some information about the demographic and social structure of Turkey, but I don't think I'll have enough time. I'm a politician, but I don't define myself as a politician yet. I'm very new in the parliament. I'm a university teacher, and my field is social politics. So if you ask me questions, I will answer them afterwards. Right now, I want to be sincere with you. I'm planning to tell you about the reasons, the main head titles of the growing discontent towards U.S. Foreign policies in Turkey. As you probably have known, there were very large demonstrations last year, 2006, starting from April and continuing for a few months. And one of the head titles of these demonstrations was the anger people felt towards United States policies. United States and Turkey have always had good relations historically, and people in Turkey really liked American people. But I think Iraqi war was the turning point for many things in Turkey. Although there were some kind of doubts about the American foreign policies, Iraqi war was the turning point, and lots of people in Turkey started to feel angry after the war started. Firstly, Turkish people did not believe that the reason of the war was to bring Iraq democracy. People in Turkey thought that this was an invasion, and lots of people were going to be killed. And as far as we know, over 1 million people were killed during the war. And Turkish people did not actually believe that the reason was democracy, because they thought that the rich petroleum reserves in Iraq was one of the main reasons of the war. And the second title for the war was the new project which was being developed in southwestern Turkey. So these were the main thoughts of Turkish people when they started to feel anger about the American policies. I think you have to know these before you give judgments about what's going on in Turkey. That's why in the beginning I said I still don't feel like a politician. I want to be sincere with you, and you have the right to know what's going on in order to build up a better and stronger relationship in the future. Another head title which I want to share with you is, as I told you, it was about the new Middle East project. People in Turkey didn't feel very comfortable when they read in the newspapers or heard that the map of new Middle East has been displayed by Lieutenant Colonel Rolf Peters in NATO's Military College in Rome, presenting a portioned and segmented Turkey. This also was one of the main reasons of the angry reactions. Because independence is very important for Turkish people, and Turkey is an independent country, and Turks are definitely determined to preserve Turkey's independence, national unity, and within this, they want to be a strategic partner of the United States, an ally of the United States, and develop this historical friendship much better. But they don't want to be ruled by another nation, even if it is United States. These are the sincere thoughts of Turkish people. And any threat forwarded towards Turkey's independence and territorial integrity is faced with an enormous reaction in Turkey. Another important head title for the anger of Turkish people is, according to us, the totally false, politicized pretensions and accusations about the Armenian genocide. This was another important issue. And according to the recent surveys held by IRI, Armenian Public Opinion Survey, I have read that only 2% of the Armenians in their first mention have declared that recognition of genocide is a current issue for the future of their country. So, Turkey's argument was that this Armenian genocide problem was used politically. So this survey, in a way, assures the argument of Turkey. Another thing I want to emphasize is religion, religious freedom, and secularism. Turkish people are very sensitive on secularism, and they have the right of being sensitive because for Turkey, secularism is a pathway to modernization, Western civilization, and democracy. So we are trying to preserve the secular characteristic of the state. Even if 99% of the population are believing in Islam, Turkey is the only country in the Islamic world which is democratic and which has a secular state. We know that Turkey is a bridge between East and West, and Turkey is a crossing point of cultures, and we are very proud of it. We are very proud of it. We are proud of being a part of the Western world, and we are decided to continue being a part of the Western world. But if a threat is posed toward Turkey's secularism, then Turkey is afraid that it will not be able to preserve the secular characteristic of the state. Now, according to most of the Turkish people, United States, in a way, is giving support to any sort of groups or actions against secular character of the state. So, according to most of the people in Turkey, United States is giving support to anti-secular groups. So that's one of the reasons people are angry about the United States politics. We know very well in Turkey, as most of you know very well, Islam is a religion in which religion and state are fused. Quranic law permits every aspect of man's lives. So after 1923, Turkey has transformed itself into a secular state, and we have accepted civil code and Turkish penal code, which led us to a secular state. So we are very afraid of losing it. If you remember from those demonstrations which took place where millions of people gathered together, over 50% of the attendants were women. Why? Because all women in Turkey know that they have acquired equal rights with the secular state. All women are aware of it, and they are very decided to preserve the secular characteristic of the state. Unfortunately, I want, if I have time, to emphasize a few more things. There are religious freedom reports which are prepared by the U.S. Department of State every year. And when we analyze these reports, we see that Turkey is always accused of putting measures on to restrict religious freedom. When I read these reports, I see that the information gathered to prepare the reports have been taken from an NGO in Turkey, Mazlumder. This NGO has always given and gives support to political Islamic movements and separatism in Turkey. If the United States prepares religious freedom reports depending on the information gathered up from an NGO which gives support to separatism and political Islamic movements, then of course the information will be one-sided and it will not reflect the truth. So what I want to emphasize is I want United States to be very sensitive when getting information from Turkish organizations and groups. Another important reason for Turkish people to think that the United States is giving support to anti-secularist groups is the event about Merve Kavakçı, the headscarf lady who was elected to Turkish parliament in 1999 and was not permitted in. Now, she's an important character for Turkish people. She was the only person who dared to come to Turkish parliament with a headscarf and is a representative of the fundamentalist Islamic movement in Turkey. She's a citizen of America, American citizen, which is not very important for us, but she was invited to American Congress Foreign Relations Commission to give a lecture on April 2005, and her headscarf was exhibited as a symbol of religious restrictions in the Beckett Fund building in 1999. Another thing, Fethullah Gülen, the head of a widespread religious lodge living in Turkey for over, living in the States for over 10 years. These are some items where the secularist wing in Turkey is very sensitive about. I know I still did not transform to be a politician because I'm speaking to you very openly. But if we are talking about Turkish and American relations, I wanted you to know very sincerely all the problems which emerged between the two nations and why some of the people in Turkey are feeling differently, started to feel differently towards the United States. I wish and hope that all the information I have given will help to improve the relations of the two nations in the future. And one more thing, when I read the newspaper today, I saw that, again, there were some remarks about Turkey being in northern Iraq. Turkey must be mindful of Iraqi sovereignty, said someone from Pentagon. And one more title, Defense Secretary Gates said that United States patience is running out. I don't think remarks like that will help to improve the relations of the two nations, because Turkey is determined to end up the PKK problem in northern Iraq. Therefore, I think all the ones holding important posts in the United States should be very sensitive about the feelings of Turkish people when they are making remarks on social, on foreign politics. Thank you for listening.
Thank you. For different reasons, neither firstly, in terms of this thing, it's kind of a honeymoon, it's a kind of a thing, but let's see the partner speaker, Mr. Sultan Meran, and we can have Istanbul for the Nationalist Movement Party, NHP, which is Turkish acronym. Mr. Meran, welcome.
Thank you, Bülent, and thank you for IR inviting us here. Having the chance to talk to you all. And I think this is the first time I am talking in an American Congress. I have been talking here very often, but not in American Congress. So I think not to talk as an economist, maybe talk as a politician. I don't know.
Both.
Because
economists are politicians.
And if I talk more as an economist, I would say that, you know, I'm normally we eat first, you know, all our lunches and dinners, first the salad, then the main dish, like something, meat or so on, and then the dessert. But what I see here, that really we are talking too much on the salad, always, and not really the main dish, because the main dish in our relations should be more economic-wise than on politic-wise, because politically, everything is doing politics by themselves, and it is easy in a way, but nobody talks about our relations related to our economies both. And what I see in economic relations between USA and Turkey, I think it is a very good American word or slang, maybe. It's peanuts. Our relations are a very, very small portion of the whole bunch. And I think it's not more than $10 billion altogether, whereas the Turkish imports are, you know, more than $165 billion in exports also. And if you look at our exports, we really export very less, very, very few to the United States. And from time to time, we talk about American investment all over the world, like every year to China, it's over $100 billion, but to Turkey, lately and altogether, only a bank I think involved is $5 billion. And how do we expect a strategic relation with a nation, between two nations, not having really economic relations, whatever? and only the economic relations we had formerly through our maybe armies, the military forces and so on. But now, last 10 years, that it's been increasing. But it's not enough. I mean, now Turkey is on the agenda, I see here, coming here, and I feel happy about it. Positive or negative, but it's on the agenda. And this is the first time I see in the United States that Turkey is really covering the agenda last days. And of course, because of Iraq. Why? Maybe you have become our neighbors from now on. I think you said 8 neighbors. Now the 9th has come there. So the relations a bit maybe change in this way. But I think, I mean, both sides, and about that Iraq operation that we have greatly done, we must underline something very importantly. This decree passed from Turkish parliament, because we all talk about democracy, all right, in the parliament. And this decree interfering Iraq passed from the Turkish parliament with more than 95% of votes, which is very important. Maybe this is the first time in Turkish history that a decree like this, a military operation, is passing with a high, overwhelming majority from Turkish parliament. I think this is the first thing we must say, because really, almost every household in Turkey, I'm very sure and positive about this, every house of Turkey has a problem with this terrorism on my country, because they send their kids, their sons, to the army. They are drafted, and their funeral comes back. So you cannot stop in Turkey really the people's real, fear or being against the United States, because they think that this is because of the United States who supports Iraq. Not PKK, I wouldn't say so. Maybe after the very openly, the 8th of November, or well, Mr. Bush said this very openly, but this is the first time. And I remember even my friends in Turkey, American friends who were with me from World Bank, they remember that 9/11, everybody was very, very sympathizing with the United States. But up then, since then, most of the Turkish people are against the United States, and this is because of northern Iraq policies. I am coming from eastern Turkey, my family, and we have always been not regarded Kurdish in one, but Turkish in Ankara. But we have been citizens of my country for last 85 years. So this is, I think, very important issue that Turkey needs the unity, Turkey needs the cooperation, keeping its unity, her unity in that country. It's very important. And we are here, or we were in Iraq last 3 days, not because invading Iraq. We were in Iraq because to really stop the terrorism. And we have been telling this to the world for last maybe 30 years, that one day you are going to suffer yourselves too, like Europeans. And at least I'm very happy that, maybe honeymoon word is good, because at least you have understood something. That's a good step, I think. Let me talk more about EEC and economy, because our foreign trade is related to what I said about the United States. It's 60%. Made with EEC, European Community, and maybe our economy is dependent more on foreign relations, foreign exchange, and foreign trade than United States. Only I think 18% of GNP is here, depends more on GNP, but Turkey is almost 50%. Now, and our trade with only with EEC is 60%, and we are covering the fifth nation of now the new 27 EEC nations. I mean, we are in fifth position, fifth rank, so they trade with us. So both sides, how we can neglect that, or how MI or my party from time to time being accused of against Europe or against West or against Western values. This is even not possible, and our relations is continuing on. But fortunately enough, the European Commission is more clever than or more realistic than European politicians of really offering Turkey like privileged partnership or other things like this. And, but Turkish story of European community is about 45 years. Even my father signed the first agreement in 1963. But still we are going on. And this is also something that you feel in Turkey, that 60, I don't know how much person, Mr. Bash knows them very well, how many persons of Turkish people are against now the European community. So you see, all of a sudden, we are ending up with a bit changing our roots, because not because of our mistakes, not only because of our mistakes, because if there is a mistake, it's both parties doing it, but because of also the policies towards the Turkey. And also, economic-wise, Turkey is having an important role in this region, and we cannot neglect it, with 75 million of population, and really gate to everywhere, and plus really a dynamic economy and very dynamic people, in fact. We have finished our maybe first generation reforms, but we must start the second generation economic reforms to convert Turkey into more market-oriented economy. Even I have been teaching economy last 15, 20 years. Even I'm not teaching my students to go and find a job in the market. I'm teaching them how to, they can get into the Turkish government in a way. So, you know, this is a transformation we need. But this transformation is also needed for instance, France and Germany, because also they need a transformation. And I'm you know, very much thinking that the last 50 years EC has passed is not going to continue with the coming 50 years. Certainly there should be a change, because the system is aging. The system, you know, unemployment is high, the people are getting older, and two important engines of European economy is really weak. And now, here and there, there is a recession, and I think this affects, especially the recession in the United States, affects Europe, then Turkey. Then these problems really stop Turkey doing more trade and economically stable enough. And also, I really wanted to give this outline because of Iraq is important there. Southeast of Turkey is very dependent to northern Iraq, and northern Iraq is very dependent to south of east of Turkey, because both logistically and economically, if they don't produce there, they cannot live. And so why not cooperation, more economic cooperation in that area? And another thing, not only in eastern Turkey, but even in Istanbul, there are very people living with $1,000 basis per capita. How you can stop having conflicts between people? And I tell you, in eastern part of Turkey where I come from, even you can find a suicide bomber for less than $10,000. We have never thought and never think of these things, and especially smuggling, you know, drug smuggling and everything, because the 50% of the Turkish economy in a way is being really fed by those things. And then it becomes very easy to feed the terrorism and the terrorists themselves. So I think we need more and more and more to deal with Turkish economy and to really increase the welfare and the level of life, and in which we should need more trade, which I really don't want to come to Salat part of it, because everybody talks quite often and even. But what I said, what I want to say is Kosovo a bit. Kosovo was, you know, really we recognized Kosovo, which was a decision that we should have made. And I think it was the right decision, and we take all the responsibilities of it. Sometimes they ask me the question of whether Kosovo is going to be an example to Cyprus or Kurdish. No, I don't think so. And we should take the responsibility of it. And also there is a new president in Cyprus, which are related to those issues. And it seems to me that rejected Annan plan is going to be on the agenda again. How is he going to act with a rejected Annan plan? Maybe he's going to change it or do the new one. But at least the dialogue should start there. But more danger is coming, not only Middle East, not only Turkey, but everywhere, is from like Pakistan and Afghanistan, all these things. Because, again, I don't want to explain everything through economy, but we must be really talk more economic side of the things than those things that we have been talking. I think for the time being, Bülent, it is enough. Then it's already 10 minutes.
Well, it really depends on what more you want to say.
No, thank you for the timing.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now, we've got about 45 minutes before we have to get out of the room. And I want to kick off. There will be questions. I will take questions from the floor, but now, exercise chairman's prerogative and ask the first question, and it will be to Ms. Sefer. Now, we're talking about the U.S.-Turkish relationship here, and you said something very important that I would like you to, if possible, expand on. You said, and I hope I'm misquoting you, the U.S. is giving support to anti-secular groups, and then you refer to Mary Tolachu and Lebanon. How big a problem, from your point of view, from your party's point of view, is this? And what would you like the U.S. to do about it?
I think it's quite a big problem, at least for people who belong to the secularist wing of Turkey. People in Turkey mostly think that without a support being given to the anti-secularist groups, they wouldn't be so powerful, politically so powerful, at least, so as to come to rule in Turkey from time to time. Especially those groups who are living outside Turkey, the ones who are living in other countries than Turkey, but other countries, the support given to them has side effects in Turkey. It gives support to the ones who belong to the fundamentalist wing and living in Turkey. Especially the prosperity, the wealth that they started to gain for the last 10 years, some of the radical fundamental groups, they have started to put impact on Turkey through media corporations, through large, big, powerful holdings and establishment. For Turkish people thinking like me, I'm actually not thinking exactly that way, but I'm reflecting the opinion of a large majority. I think that's very important for most of the people.
Yeah, Mr. Bash wants to say something, but if I may just quickly follow up, are you blaming the administration or the Congress for this, or are you saying that they are being allowed to...
It's not a very open policy. Of course, the United States would not very openly be giving support to such a group, but it is a disguised support, like seen in most of the places in the world. When some pre-talkings have been made and agreements reached, then support comes afterwards in many ways.
Thank you.
Well, with all due respect, I would like to remind Ms. Sertar, who constantly talks about speaking for majority, millions, demonstrations, to go back and check the numbers of the election results of July 2007, only a few months ago. I am very honored to represent a political party that has received one out of every two votes in Turkey. And about Turkish modernization and about the Western values in Turkey, let me tell you, no other party is more committed to the most important Westernization and modernization project of the history of our country, which is European Union membership, than my party. And let me remind you that the direction of the Turkish nation for more than 1,000 years has been towards the West, and it will continue to be towards the West. But that doesn't mean we have to give up our assets on the East either. Turkey is the only country that has started her EU negotiations for full membership of the European Union, the same year getting the Secretary Generalship of the Organization of Islamic Conference. That's what makes Turkey unique. Turkey is the only country that could bring together the presidents of Israel and Palestine on their way to Annapolis in the Turkish Grand National Assembly. Turkey is the country where Pakistani and Israeli foreign ministers choose to meet to start their diplomatic relations. Turkey is the country where Pakistan and Afghani leaders meet. Turkey is the country where OIC and EU foreign ministers meet. Turkey is the country where the Sunni leaders of Iraq meet with the U.S. ambassador to Iraq. And there are many other examples of how Turkey is and will continue to be a hub for peace and for prosperity. Mr. Melen mentioned about economic issues. Thank you. I thank him for that. As a representative of, again, the party that has increased Turkey's foreign trade by more than 100% in the last 5 years and increased the per capita income by 300% in the last 5 years, I think economic relations are good. But there is huge room to increase that potential. I agree with you on that. And finally, I would like to state that the Turkish Constitution clarifies that Turkey is a democratic, secular, state, social state of law. There are four characteristics in the preamble of the Constitution. None of them can be sacrificed for any one of the others. So they're all very important. They're all very sensitive to all of us. We have to protect Turkey's secularism as much as we have to protect Turkey's democracy, Turkey's state of law nature, and Turkey's social state nature. And that's what we're doing in Turkey. That's why Turkey is getting to be stronger, more mature. Turkish democracy is definitely more mature than the past. I mean, we're talking of a country that executed his own prime minister after a military coup 50 years ago. 20 years ago, books of Kafka and Dostoevsky were collected because they were found to be provocative. They were propagating communism. 8 years ago, unfortunately, mayor of one of our largest cities was imprisoned for reciting a poem, which is in our textbooks. But the same city today has been chosen as culture capital of Europe for year 2010. And as you know, culture and art is the platform for freedom of expression. Turkey has found the courage to express herself, and Turkey is on the correct path, ladies and gentlemen.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
Just one word.
No,
just only one sentence. I want to apologize from the audience for giving Mr. Egemen Bash the chance of making his party's propaganda, because I didn't have such a name of arguing or quarreling with him. We do it in Turkey all the time, so. That's why I extend my apologies to the audience for having them listen to the propaganda of his party.
Go ahead, give yours.
No.
By the way, I just wanted to follow up what Egemen Bay said. And the mayor of Istanbul, who was arrested, now has a different job, which is about to mention. And it's Turkey, of course. Now, because it is being recorded, we're going to put it on our website for those who could not attend. Who could identify yourself? Before you ask a question, please do so.
Yumi, thank you. So, NT Television. Just about an hour before this meeting started, President Bush was speaking on television news conference, and the summary of what he said was about Turkey. He said, "Get the hell out of Kurdistan as quickly as possible." So, what are we talking? So, this is a key thing.
Out of Turkey.
Iraq as quick as possible, and he used Northern Iraq and Kurdistan. He said the word Kurdistan. Well, basically, do you think this is relevant to the U.S.?
Pardon?
You are the ruling party, so you should give the answer to this question. Everyone knows what you think.
What's today? 28th February, another key date?
Good question.
Well, I haven't seen the president's statement. I haven't heard it myself, so I don't know the exact quote. But I can tell you what I've heard from the president's mouth myself. PKK is the enemy of the United States, and Turkey is after PKK terrorists. We have a very defined mission in northern part of Iraq. We are after the terrorists that are responsible for more than 40,000 lives in our country. And those of you who can understand the reflections of September the 11th can understand what it means for Turks. This is something that all three of us are, I think, united, that Turkey needs to put an end to PKK terrorism, and Turkey is determined to that. And the United States, as our ally, with whom we have been sharing the same values and fighting for the same values in countries like Korea, Kosovo, Somalia, Afghanistan, Bosnia, and there's so much that unites us. I'm sure the President and Secretary Gates and Secretary Rice and members of this Congress all would agree that there are no good terrorists and bad terrorists. Terrorists don't discriminate when they kill, so countries should not discriminate in their fight against terrorism. As I said in the beginning of my remarks, to us, for us, PKK is what Al-Qaeda is to you, to the members of this audience. So we are determined to deal with terrorism. And what's happening in northern Iraq today is not any different than what your troops attempted to do in Tora Bora Mountains in Afghanistan. We have to definitely will be more successful. And we don't intend, you see, we don't have any aspire to have any inch of Iraqi soil or any Iraqi natural resources. But we are very much interested in putting an end to PKK terrorism. That's our only target, that's our only mission, and we're determined to do this. And I'd like to remind that when the Turkish parliament instructed the government and our military to do this job, the vote was almost unanimous. More than 500 members of the Turkish parliament voted in favor of this operation, and the parties that are represented on this panel all unanimously voted for that resolution.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Melan, your party's leader, Mr. Bakhtiari, has talked about establishing a buffer zone in northern Iraq. As you pick this up, would you want to comment on that? Is that your party's policy? Is that your preference?
Yes, but I think this buffer zone was before that decision taking. So new policies are there. But what I would like to comment is, I used to sit 7-8 months ago in those chairs, so not as a journalist, but maybe as a columnist. So we should be very careful about our languages, about getting hell out of Iraq, something like this. I don't think that this kind of remarks could be made anyhow. But of course, there is an opposition that could be understandable coming from the United States sides and even from Baghdad government. But I think the Turkish army is not going to stay there anymore and going to pull out. And this buffer zone was a different idea. Now it's really changed, because technically Turkish parliament left it to the army to decide about those technicalities, including buffer zone.
Yeah, Congressman, while you were out, the question was asked.
PKK.
And specifically with reference to President Bush's statement today that the Turkish troops should withdraw
through Gates.
Secretary Gates' comments. Would you want to comment on this as well?
Well, first I would want to say, for Americans to say that Turkey does not have any right or obligation to go after a terrorist organization that crosses a border would be to take away every argument we've ever made as a country about, my word, we're not... just didn't go across a border. We went across the Atlantic to the Persian Gulf. So we would have no weight whatsoever to say that Turkey doesn't have that right. And Turkey has every right to expect that the Iraqi government, and therefore us as those who provide a security force, has every right to expect that we would have dealt with the issue. It's no secret we provided Turkey with valuable information, on-time information, and we warned the PKK exactly what we think they are. But having said all of that, I think Turkey knows that there are nationalistic fervors within parts of Iraq, and so Turkey has to be aware that they handle it in a way that achieves their result and doesn't cause a bigger problem. Being there indefinitely would be, I don't think, necessary, and they should always keep the option open that they'll come back if they have to.
Thank you. In fact, the next question, if you could actually specify who you want to ask your question, because that might save us some time. Go ahead.
Well, if we're talking about a comprehensive solution to the Kurdish issue and the southern eastern part of Turkey issue, I'd like to remind that in 2002, when AK Party received almost 35% of the votes, our vote in the region was 10% lower than the national average, around 25%. In 2004, in the municipal elections, our votes were almost the same as the national average, which was 42%. And this past July, when we had 47% national average, our vote in the southeastern part of Turkey was almost 60%, which was more than 10% higher than the national average. So this shows that the people in the southeastern part of Turkey, predominantly Kurdish people, have chosen to vote for the party that serves them rather than ideologically exploits them. Party that claims to represent the Kurdish identity has 20 members in the Turkish parliament. And parties, including my party and other parties that are represented here, have a much larger Kurdish representation. I could say maybe one-fourth of the Turkish parliament today is of Kurdish descent. The different ethnicities in the parliament is a richness for our country. If we were talking about a comprehensive solution to the PKK issue, and PKK is a terrorist organization, and the solution of dealing with a terrorist organization is what Turkey is doing right now. For those members of PKK who have not been affected by Turkey's air operations and now land operations, there still is opportunity for them to come and surrender for the just prosecution of the Turkish authorities, and they will be prosecuted, and then they will have a chance to become members of the society after having served their time.
Next question, please. Right in the back. Can you identify yourself?
Yes, Ida Kürtler, Vice President of Turkish Coalition for America. My question is to you, Congressman. It's a bit of a comment and a question. Thank you, first of all, for your support.
Sure.
You mentioned that Turkey would win if it would sort of reach out in a hand of friendship to...
It would what? I'm sorry?
Turkey would benefit
yes.
from better friendly relations
yes.
with its neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
But that must be a two-way street. As far as I know, the reason why Turkey and Armenia do not have the level of relationship that you would desire is because of the continuing occupation of Azerbaijan,
mm-hmm.
territory by Armenia proper. And on the Turkish versus the Northern Iraqi administration side, Turkey was one of the countries that supported this administration's evolution, in fact, and it helped that region to develop economically by providing it electricity and all kinds of other the support. Right. It seems to me that good neighborly relations need to be going both ways. I was wondering about your comments on
Well, that. Given that we have had a policy with Cuba that has been as nonsensical, in my judgment, I can't throw stones. But what I can do is say that if we treated all our neighbors like we treated Cuba, we would be very isolated. And it's my judgment, speaking as a Westerner, that there are some substantive things you could build on with your neighbors. The effort to help the interaction between Greece and Turkey in terms of exchanging humanitarian needs and so on, in spite of Cyprus and so on, I think are very positive. I'm just reacting to a very kind, sensitive, meek questions from the Armenian delegation at Munich, and such a hard response by the Prime Minister about we're not going to give an inch and so on, and brought up issues that were not even asked by the Armenian delegation. To me, he lost, I think, within that room, I think most people just shook their head.
Congressman, if I may respond to that.
Were you there?
No, but I watched it on live television.
Yeah. I
know the Prime Minister's feelings, yeah. And I actually share them.
Yeah.
If you were in his shoes, you would do the same. This Prime Minister was the first Prime Minister in Turkey's history to allow airplanes of Armenia to land in Turkey a few weeks after coming to power. This Prime Minister is the Prime Minister that decided to renovate the historical Armenian church in the center of the island in Lake Van. This Prime Minister is the first Prime Minister ever to send a letter with unanimous support of the Turkish Parliament to President of Armenia, asking to establish a joint committee of historians and scholars to study the archives. And I mind you that one of the largest archives is in Boston and is close to Turkish historians. Only Armenian scholars have access to that. And whereas this Prime Minister has instructed for more than 1 million documents to be public in Turkey for any historian of any country, and this Prime Minister has done everything he can to start some kind of a dialogue with the leaders of Armenia, and all of his calls, including his call to say, I am ready to face my own history if you're ready to face yours, all of his attempts have been overturned and not responded by the leadership in Armenia. You would be as frustrated as Prime Minister Erdogan if you had tried so much to solve this issue. He has solved Turkey's issues with all of Turkey's neighbors, almost. Our trade with our neighbors has increased by more than 300%. The only country that we haven't been able to resolve our issues with, the only neighboring country, is Armenia. And that's because of their stubbornness attempt. And at times, as a young politician who's trying to study the developments, I'm not sure if we're really dealing with the Armenian leadership or those who are dictating their decisions.
Okay. Let me just say, first off, that I think in response to the question was asked about Azerbaijan, I think that's a legitimate complaint that Turkey has, totally legitimate, just as we would have legitimate complaints with Cuba about how it deals with its own people. But we, in our delegation and others around me, saw this as a softball throw. I don't know how you'd use it in soccer, but in baseball, a slow pitch that you could hit out of the park. He had an opportunity, in my judgment, to say, we have done so much. My administration has done this, 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 and this. But we have huge questions about Azerbaijan, and that is an impediment from us moving forward. But there was never the question about, the Armenian question about, I'll say the word genocide as some use it and not as others. That never even was brought up, but he seemed to respond to that as the question. And I'm just making the point to you that as a politician, I thought he was given a softball
to hit a home run out of the park in American terms. And I thought he missed a huge opportunity. That's my point.
Well, he has tried to play softball for so long, and he is under criticism in Turkey, and all politics is local, by his constituents, onto why he's not playing hardball anymore.
Okay. Mr. Congressman, I can't resist following up myself. The resolution that was voted out of the Foreign Affairs Committee...
Who brought that up?
No, I... if it had come to the floor, as it was speculated, you would have had to address the issue one way or the other. Yeah. Now, given the fact that you were there when this, even though the resolution itself was not brought up, the overall Armenian-Turkish relationship, which, as you know, is much discussed in this House of Representatives, did come up. As you look at the issue, which might well come up again, is this the kind of thing that you are looking at before you make up your mind?
Well, I'll say a few things. First off, Turkey, whatever people determine on that issue, the Turkish people have every right to say, why single us out? Because there are examples throughout the world where people have, I think, very real concerns about what happened to their forefathers. And I understand that argument. The challenge on our side down here is that we look at it and we think it was a genocide of a people. And yet I know that the Turks could say that they've seen genocide here, 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 and here. From our simple way of looking at it as Americans, we tend to think, why carry the burdens of your forefathers? That is, we tend not to think so far about history, and I realize this is modern history for people in that region. So, you know, that's kind of what we wrestle with. Now, what I will tell you I did, being on this resolution, I went to our people and I said, this is about one of the stupidest things that I can imagine, bringing this up. In a time when we're trying to, and we know that the Turkey has tried to reach out in a way on this issue as well, that it's a huge slap in the face of the government and its people. And so the first thing that we tried to do, and I had conversations with Tom Lantos as well, there was unanimity among many members, Republicans and Democrats, that whatever you thought about this resolution, this was the wrong time to bring it up. Now then, we're then faced with what do we tell our own constituents. That very same week, I had constituents who came in to thank me for being on the resolution. And I wasn't in the office, and they started to walk out, and I came into the office. I ran after them, and I said, I am on this resolution, but I think it is endangering our effort in Iraq, hurting a relationship that we're trying to build with the Turkish government, and I think it is an absolute huge mistake to bring it up. Then what I had to do was I had to call up people, and word spread throughout my district. I've been on this resolution so long, and now I'm saying it shouldn't come up. And then I had to call up my best supporter in my district, my best friend, and I told him I could not support this, and I believe we need to table the resolution. And he started to cry. He felt that for 10 years he believed in me and my faith in this. And I just said, but having said this, I said, if the table failed, I could not vote no against the resolution. So, you know, there is the issue as I've tried to sort it out. I've made a lot of people unhappy in my district. And I pray, hope and pray that it doesn't come to the floor. And if it does, I hope we have the good sense to table it.
Thank you. At the back. No, yourself with glasses.
My name is Yurta Özcan. I'm the president of ARE Foundation here in Washington.
What foundation, sir?
ARE.
ARE.
Bees.
Yeah.
My question is to you, Congressman, about Turkish Cyprus. Currently in Turkey and in Turkish Cyprus, there is a growing expectation that finally, we might have a breakthrough in the case of Turkish Cyprus due to two recent developments. The first one is the recent independence declaration of Kosovo, which we hope may set a precedent for the case of Cyprus. And second is the recent elections in Cyprus where Papadopoulos, who lost, who rejected the Kofi Annan plan in 2004 and pushed the people to reject the plan, lost the election and lost the office. So do you foresee any developments in 2008 where the embargoes against the Turkish Cyprus may finally be lifted, or a possible U.S. support for to declare independence?
I'm going to tread very carefully in this issue because I don't know enough about it. I don't know enough about it. And you could say, well, I should, but I don't. I have 24 hours of my day to which I get about 6 hours sleep. I will say this, however. If that issue can be resolved, it will benefit Cyprus and the Turkish government and the Turkish people. I don't know how it gets resolved.
Question.
In this, if I may, I would like to make an invitation to Congressman Shays. I had invited Congressman Whitfield and his colleagues. They were the first official foreign delegation to land in Erjan Airport in Cyprus, and after which we have hosted many other international delegations. If you could spare the time, sir, we would be honored to host you in Cyprus, in the Turkish Republic of Northern Cyprus, where you would be, you would witness that when the sun shines every morning on that island, it shines on two different states with two different presidents, two different parliaments, two different prime ministers, two different cabinets, two different school systems, two different infrastructure and so forth. We're hoping that the new president elect in the Greek Cypriot administration will be successful. It's going to be a very unique, we'll see a communist running an EU member country. It's going to be a different experience for the world, but we are hoping a fair settlement that can be feasible for both parties is...
Well, I promise you this. If I inject myself into this issue, I will come and visit first, but I'm more interested in Eastern Turkey and its relationship with Iraq, and I'm going to focus my time, attention, and effort there.
So I invite
there,
you.
Thank you.
You know, Congressman, the Kurdish question, the Arab question, and the Cyprus question, that sounds like an overload. So.
Yeah, it is an overload.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
I'm
Dr. Aspen
from
Southeast Europe Policy
Center.
I'm Southeast Europe Policy Scholar at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars, and I'm conducting my research exclusively on Turkey. And I want to address my question to Dr. Zeker, and thank you very much for your very candid comments. My part B is couched in my A of my question, okay?
That means it's a trick question.
It's not a trick question. But, and I know this is a Turkey-America honeymoon discussion, but you brought up a very important issue about sovereignty, state sovereignty, and the sensitivities in Turkey of not having any other country meddle in state affairs, which we hold very dear here in the United States as well, and most countries do. Entering the European Union will mean giving up a lot of sovereignty. Brussels will, as it does for all EU members, meddle very much in state affairs, and I wanted to hear your views on that.
Great question. That's a great question.
Thank you. I thought it was a trick question. In the context of...
It's a trick question.
This is what my research is on. In the context of the rapid marketization and commodification of education, particularly from the United States, that is taking place in Turkey, and the kind of cultural... I don't want to use the word subversion. I can't just find a better word. But the cultural infiltration that comes with that kind of marketization of fixed educational packages from other countries, and how you juxtapose that and balance that with non-meddling in other states' affairs and maintaining sovereignty, especially on a cultural level.
You're going to write her paper if you answer this.
Yeah, PhD.
Yes, very briefly. Very briefly, I have to give an answer to this. Firstly, most of the people in Turkey who were attending the demonstrations were shouting they were against the American policies as well as against the European Union policies, and they don't accept to give their sovereignty and to get to give their sovereignty in spite of entering the European Union. So that's a very important problem. That's why most of the political parties in Turkey, while they are mentioning about being a part of the European Union, underline the fact that in Turkey we want to be a part of the European Union. We want to be a member, but without losing our sovereignty. So that's a topic which is very arguable in Turkey. That's one of the main problems when we speak about being a member of a European Union without losing our sovereignty, then of course another wide door or path opens to you on various discussions. So that's something which is argued in Turkey too. I cannot give you another answer on this issue, but about the education system, the education you mentioned about the education packages coming to Turkey. Education is part of adopting some values. I mean, in education, through education, the young people are adapting values such as independency, such as preserving national unity, such as being preserving the Republic, Turkish Republic, and so forth. So when education is directed from other parts of the world, if Turkey cannot give decisions about what sort of an education Turkish young people and children must get, then of course this has some relations with the European Union too, because we know that some of the history books, for example, are rearranged according to the demands of the European Union. So it's all in the same question, and I can tell you that many people in Turkey are thinking like you. While you were asking the question, you also, I think, gave the answer within it. And that's a thing we are working on and trying to solve, I can say. Thank you for the question.
Yeah, we're to our last quarter on, and I'm really impressed that you know, everybody has other things to do, that everybody is staying, and I think it's testament to the importance of meeting. I think we maybe will take two more questions, but we got Ben wanted to say something before I go.
Yes, but am I helping you or not with your PhD or with new book? But my PhD is on European integration. Okay, with your new book then. I think your question, is a bit the result that happened in Europe, you know, what? Because they rejected the constitutions themselves because of losing the integrity.
Some countries.
So I think this is whole issue there. I mean, and Roman agreement, if you look carefully to Roman agreement, and Lisbon agreement is a bit trying to find solutions to that thing. But the constitution being rejected was exactly answer to your question.
If you are in the position of a ruling country in the European Union, if you are the one who are giving decisions, then it doesn't have any importance whether you lose your sovereignty or not. But if you are in the position of the ones who are being ruled, then it's very important.
You had your hand up.
About the sovereignty thing, I mean, we shouldn't forget that when you're giving up some sovereignty, you're getting a share of the common sovereignty of the union as well.
Decision power.
This is his opinion, of course. I don't share.
Go ahead.
My name is Ray Moss. I'm with the Middle East Peace Initiative, an NGO here in D.C. This is for Eglon Bayış especially. How do you view Turkey's role in Middle East peace? I mean, I know that there is an attempt by your government to play the role of a mediator. How comfortable is Turkey with that? What is Turkey's vision should be in its role in the region? And is it welcomed by everybody in the region?
Well, I don't know if it's welcomed or not, but I'll give you some examples. When the two Israeli soldiers are kidnapped, the first country Prime Minister Olmert calls to ask for help is Turkey. When the same Israel invades Lebanon, the same country Prime Minister Senyora calls to ask for help is Turkey. when the 14 British troops are kidnapped, the first country Tony Blair calls to ask for help is Turkey. And if those 14 British troops are free today, they owe it to Prime Minister Erdogan and President Gül. Someone who has been in
good
the
answer.
Kitchen knows how much they have worked, as much as President Ahmadinejad, you know, put on a show in the release, but I know what was behind that whole effort. So I previously said, you know, if presidents of Palestine and Israel choose to come to Ankara on their way to Annapolis, this is an important decision on their part. If Turkey today has the full trust of all the players in this very difficult equation, including Palestine, Israel, Lebanon, Iran, Saudis, Jordanians, everyone else in the region, this shows that Turkey is a unique country which can play a role, which is willing to play a role, because in our culture, we have a saying that if your neighbor's house is on fire and if you don't help them put it out, the fire will catch up with your house. So we're going to be very forthcoming in putting an end to all the fires in our region.
Great answer.
Okay, with that, I'd like to thank, wrapping up slightly early, the questions are brought up. I'd like to thank the three members of the Church Parliament for going away from Ankara.